So you have a good sense of the
more or less, yes. More, yeah.
So we, I think most of the interviews we've tried to keep under 45 minutes,
yep,
for the most part, because then Lena, who's doing the transcribing, you know, if it becomes too long, it becomes really unwieldy.
Yeah.
So, and the typical questions have to do with general, how you organize your life at home around food, general,
mm-hmm,
attitudes towards food, how that's evolved over time. And as you can imagine, it's quite, you know, different sorts of questions that we'd be,
sure,
asking of someone in their 90s who has a very long life and deep memories of a very different sort of past than really young kids who are... what happens to be with really young kids is we're really interested also in their relationship with their parents and their grandparents,
mm-hmm,
and stories they have about them. So a lot of the project has to do with time.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with change and evolution and,
yeah, totally,
the snapshot of the city. So a typical question that we start out with is, what is your earliest memory of food?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe even the first thing that comes to mind.
It's already popped up. The
mm-hmm,
the earliest memory is something that's, I think it's quite typical, but it's things that you eat when you're very young, and then for some reason you stop eating because it's sort of very early comfort food, but it's, I don't know why, when you grow up you don't make it anymore, or they don't make it for you anymore. So it was when I was probably about 3 or 4, and my mom used to just go out at night, Saturday nights, and leave me at home with my dad or a babysitter, and fried spaghetti from the lunch in the morning, so refried, but which was amazing because they all became crunchy and the sauce was a little dried up, and it was like this sort of almost like an early McDonald's, or uovo al pomodoro, which is another like super protein type of food that you get. I used to get a lot when I was a child, so it's just like a tomato sauce and an egg just dropped in and cooked in the tomato sauce in the oven, and then cheese.
So were those things they would make for you and nobody else? It was,
well,
things just made for you when you were...
Yeah, it was very much a weekend thing, so every week it was like almost like a, you know, something special because it was really tasty, but I had to remember it, I had to sort of go in quite deep and remember it, because probably when I was already like 10 or 11, they were, you know, nobody was making them anymore.
Right. It's so funny, and it's also something, it seems to be connected to the fact that everyone's going out and you're at home.
Yeah, it was like this, my mom was like quite young and she wasn't really, I think it's typical for a mom to, if she doesn't know how to cook, to learn how to cook while she's growing her child, while she's raising her children. So, you know, it was something simple to make, but I was really enthusiastic about it.
So she got to be a better cook the older that you got?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Should we put it here instead so it's facing?
Yeah, because I have a problem with battery.
Oh, how's it now? That's all right.
Is it there? 50%. That's okay.
Yeah. All right.
I think it was a young parent thing. Because now it's like whenever she makes a meal, it's, you know, has to be 4 courses or something. Like she's able to sort of cook 3 courses of a meal in about half an hour. But whereas before it was like really simple, and fish fingers was like an event. You know, it was very minimal.
So can you describe, when you were really young, maybe that age, can you describe a typical day? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what you would have eaten throughout the day?
Yeah, it's crystal clear, actually. It's, also, because I think comfort food comes from that, from the stuff you used to have, safe food you used to have as a child. But it was chocolate milk in the morning and...
Nesquik?
Nesquik, yes. Probably...
It's the same generation,
mm-hmm,
friends.
Same generation.
Because we have a meeting with Loic, is the same breakfast for Loic.
Loic, yes.
Can,
yeah, me and Loic have a lot of food conversations.
Yeah.
And for lunch, it was something like this sort of refried pasta, or again pasta pomodoro, and some meat, the fettina, which in Rome is like the really sort of quite thin slice of beef of some kind, and sort of cooked a lot in the pan, so it's quite chewy. And I really remember being sort of chewing this meat throughout the lunch, like for a long time, because you know, it's like you have to eat it all, and just chewing this thing for like 45 minutes, and sort of sometimes running to the toilet to spit it out.
So that was for, that's lunch.
That was
you
lunch.
Were usually with.
Did you have lunch at home?
Yeah, lunch at home, because my parents were separated really early, so my dad would pick me up at school because my mom was at work, and I would have lunch with my dad every day. And
so did he cook?
Well, usually there was something that was kind of left over from the morning that that had to be reheated. If it was like the piece of meat, yeah, he would cook it. And also it was just like a fried egg with sunny side up, because he doesn't like cooking either, so it was always very simple and minimal. And at dinner it was pretty much the same stuff. If you had meat at lunch, then you had pasta for dinner and so on.
And who's usually at dinner and who cooked?
Oh, it was my mom all the time. And then with the years, you know, it was sort of, it became the kind of staple dishes became more and more, and it was like risotto alla milanese, and she used to bake this amazing onion pie, like a tart with a phyllo pastry and this sort of mix of onions and egg blended together and cooked in the oven, which was also very recurrent and amazing. Frittata, you know, always quite simple. And then the more we went on, the more she started making ragu and sort of fish dishes and other stuff. But I became vegetarian when I was like 15, so...
Wow, why?
Because I realized I didn't like meat.
The taste?
Yeah.
And that was the only reason?
Yeah, I wasn't really too bothered about...
Wow. So what did your mom say about that?
She was really fighting it in the beginning. And you know, she was making, maybe she would make soup using like chicken stock instead of veggie stock and stuff like that, sort of really subtle. But then after sort of protesting a lot, she stopped. And I was just eating like other stuff.
So are you still vegetarian?
No.
So when did you stop?
I stopped when I was 21 probably, so from like maybe 15 to 21, 22. And then it sort of started smelling good again, you know, salami and meat and sausages. So I started again and I became like totally omnivore.
Was she happy?
Yeah, she. But by then she didn't really care anymore.
Yeah.
La la. Good. You know. So,
Rito.
And, you know, because of that, I was always quite sort of into foreign foods like French fries or like soy-based products when I was in my teen years, because everything was meat-based. Like in Rome, it's really, it's not easy to eat something that's, like falafel was like, wow, you know?
So that must have been really inconvenient at that age not to eat meat, though, when you were a teenager, like going out with friends. Was that really unusual? Among your friends?
No, actually there was a lot of, because we were all sort of punk hardcore kids, so everyone was really, it was quite a trend to be vegetarian, so pretty much everyone was.
Wow, really? That's amazing.
So we would go to small Chinese takeaway places or eat pizza or have falafels, you know, stuff like that. Buy some really bad, like shitty sort of soya burgers from the supermarkets.
So why do you think that is? Why was that a trend?
I think it was just because it was so different from, you know, being like middle class kids and being, everyone thought it was a crazy thing, like a really self-punitive thing to be a vegetarian. So, you know, it was sort of, it was just about, the whole punk thing was just trying to stick out and not be.
That's fascinating, because I would imagine that a lot of people, I would imagine, we're just talking about how he was vegetarian from the ages of 15. We're doing this in English so I can edit it, Lena. Aren't you happy?
Good.
So, how is vegetarian for 15 to 21?
21, 22, yeah.
So what's fascinating is that the reaction I get from a lot of Italians of a certain age, maybe who were alive during the war, is that for a young person to be vegetarian is such a crazy thing.
It's
during the war,
yeah.
It's offensive almost, because they would have died for a piece of meat. Like, they were eating whatever they could, like potato soup.
My grandma was completely appalled.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, giving me like prosciutto or tortellini with meat inside, saying, that's not meat, it's prosciutto. You know.
So was it a way for that young punk culture to kind of reject the previous generations? Like,
yeah, it wasn't that conscious. It was just about sort of, you know, wanting to... I mean, for me, it was actually a need, because I didn't like it. I didn't, you know, maybe I could eat something that was really, like a meatloaf, something that was really far from the idea of a bloody sort of organic living thing. But some people were just into it because it made them, you know, it's like a sense of belonging to something else.
I had no idea. So then, was your mom's development as a cook something that was inspired by? I mean, was she learning from her mother?
She definitely was, because my grandmother was, you know, sort of institutionally recognized as the best. And she had all these notebooks with, like, but she was hardcore. Like, my grandmother was totally, she was from Milan, and she was always a housewife with three children, so she was just constantly cooking. And because of this thing of having been through the war, you know, it was like abundance, like whatever is available has to be there all the time, and you have to sort of take advantage of it, because you never know. Like, she was always telling these stories about, you know, queuing for bread, and she actually, one thing that I really liked to do that she taught me was these sort of stale bread dishes that I love, which you cook in the oven with like wet bread and tomatoes or anchovies or eggs, things like that. But why are we talking about this?
Oh, so is she, well, your mother was learning from her,
yeah.
But also, maybe you can describe, Grant, like, meals that you had. No, this was your mother's mother, who you're talking about, was appalled that you didn't eat meat. As
yeah,
well, yeah. The sneaking prosciutto and things.
Yes, yes.
So, can you describe meals that you had with her? Or did you have a regular, like,
schedule
the year of meals at her house? Or?
Yeah, well, you know, you had the whole Christmas and Easter and very Catholic grandparents. But the thing was that she was from Milan, and really a Milanese woman, like very very bourgeois and very sort of emancipated at the same time. And her husband was from Sicily, and he was totally the opposite, like really strict, traditional, completely like irascible, crazy Sicilian. And they were always fighting, and she was always making dishes from the north just to spite him. So sometimes, though, as a, you know, when they were kind of getting along, she would make stuff from like caponata or cassata or Sicilian meatballs. So you had this sort of mix. But she was always making these boiled meat dishes that went on for like 2 days, you know, like bollito misto or this gallina faraona, risotto al milanese with the marrow, with the osso buco, amazing.
It's one of my favorite dishes.
Yeah, that's kind of a regret, because when I was vegetarian, she was still alive. I was always refusing the stuff, and then I missed it. So, yeah, or like gallina faraona, which is like this what is it, a big hen?
It's the one
stuffed with
the
olives and other meat.
Do you remember in Pegliano, the black gallina?
Oh yeah.
That it get out from the musician.
The pen.
Yeah. I don't know if if that's a hen or something else. Or these really 80s dishes, like she had this fish sort of mold thing, and she'd fill it with like tuna and mayonnaise and capers, and she'd make this fake fish.
Yes.
Fish pinto. Vitello tonnato.
Fettine alla milanese.
Fettine, sì, like Wiener Schnitzel, fettine alla milanese.
So can you describe the activity of going to her house and having a meal? Like, would you, all the family would go up to Milan? And so did
no,
you
no, they were living in Rome.
They were living in Rome?
They were sort of north and south, and they kind of...
I see, okay.
Maybe.
And I'm sorry, did you have siblings at that time that you were?
I have a sister who is 8 years younger than me, so for a while I was only child, but it was always a huge meal with cousins and, you know, parents, brothers and sisters, and they had a huge apartment, and you know, sort of when people get to an age, sort of past middle age, they get up earlier and earlier, so my grandma was always up at 6 and she'd start cooking, so she was always in the kitchen, and they had this amazing old school like kitchen with a marble, huge marble table in the middle, and she was always there slicing stuff, and she had this like electric cheese grater.
So what was she like? What was her attitude towards food? I mean, beyond what you described, is there anything about you being there at her house in her kitchen at the dining table in particular that you remember, like her way of cooking or engaging with people when she's cooking or serving or eating? Like what was her?
For one, she didn't want any sort of activity around her in the kitchen. She wasn't rough, but she was always very, she could be very severa, like,
very tricky.
Yeah, very much. So she would kick you out of the kitchen, and then she would kind of just force feed you, and she'd get upset because
if you didn't,
the war thing, yeah.
So if you didn't, when you're sitting at the table, is she sitting at the table with you?
Yeah, she was. There was a big table, and everyone was sitting down, and she was very religious, so sometimes she would do a little prayer thing.
And then plates would keep coming out, or was it all served at once?
No, they had this big sort of trolley cart type thing. So it was all there, and then sometimes something was baking in the oven, so she'd get up and bring it over. She would make this also this really stuff that you don't do, like, you know, chicken jelly and stuff like that as well, like things in, you know, like aspic, things encased in gelatin, things that you don't really see anymore at all, very 70s, 80s stuff.
Mm. And so did your grandfather ever cook?
No way. He would never get out of bed either. He was just in bed sort of cutting out things from newspapers and shouting.
What things from newspapers?
Articles he liked.
And did
her husband?
Did he have strong opinions about the food?
Had strong opinions about anything. So yes, and he was always commenting, you know, this is whatever, barbarians from the north, they cook like this. They put the meat underneath the saddle to cook it, and that sort of stuff, and uh-huh. She'd get upset.
So then, as you got older, maybe you can describe how you were eating maybe in your teens when you were vegetarian?
Oh, just really kind of bad stuff, like really processed food and loads of pasta, loads of cheese. But by then I was always cooking for myself, so I was making this sort of quite hideous pasta with gorgonzola.
So when did you first start to cook, do you remember?
When I was about 15 or 16, really sort of making experiments.
Because you enjoyed it or because you had to?
Because I enjoyed it.
And you were cooking for yourselves?
Yeah. Because by then I was having lunch on my own, so
yeah.
I would usually either have leftovers, but just try and cook stuff on my own. But loads of those terrible soy burgers and maybe some eggs, but it was mostly white and yellow food. I think.
Wow. So then...
mayonnaise.
So then, when did you become more conscious of food then? Was there a moment where you became more like a transition from being vegetarian and maybe just not eating meat and eating more processed food?
Yeah, yes, because I moved to London after that when I was 18, so... Over there, the processed food is really processed, so slowly you learn, you know, how to eat, like, you realize how the good stuff is good, and you start kind of from scratch.
Did you miss Italian food when you were there?
Yeah. But I also really liked, I still really like all the food that you can find anywhere else. So I was really curious. I was eating loads of Turkish food and loads of Vietnamese food and, you know, whatever, with Greek food, whatever was around.
So you were there on your own? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I think it's interesting if Nibala speak about London and how it's possible to and impact with English culture in food.
Well, I don't know about English culture. I know that it's very, now it's very easy to eat whatever you want, basically. It's not the sort of cliche of, you know, England where you eat only baked beans and tinned food and stuff. It's like any other big city.
Do you remember the first time you had fast food?
Yeah, with my dad.
So where was that?
In Rome.
At
it
where?
Was a sort of cinema nights with my dad, and we just went to the first early fast foods that were open in Rome, which were private sort of small places where it wasn't chains, and it was pretty good, I think, because it was just a small restaurant, so you know. There was a place called Poppy Burgers that was somewhere, I don't know, maybe in San Giovanni, and we used to go there a lot and have cheeseburgers and shakes.
So did you associate that food with anything in particular? Did you associate it with America? Did you associate it with like the future, or something very modern, or was
no?
It,
it was about
good?
Happy Days was always on TV. So
oh really?
Yeah.
How funny.
So it was really associated with that.
So with America.
Yeah, with America, which was cool, obviously. And also there was the whole paninaro thing, which was really about that.
What's that?
Paninaro is sozzone.
No, paninaro is a thing that was in fashion during the mid-80s, especially in Milan. The Pet Shop Boys wrote this song about it. And it was all about wearing designer clothes and, you know, like American stuff, like Timberland boots, puffer jackets, wearing like loads of gel, riding motocross bikes, eating. And the thing is that, you know, it was not really like mods, but something like a gang type thing. And they were called paninari because they would hang out by the fast foods all the time.
So eating fast food is a part
of
that
lifestyle. Yeah. And it's not, here it wasn't as big as it was in Milan, but, you know, it was also associated with that a lot.
It's also related with TV, because there was a TV show, Drive-In, with all this kind of stuff imaginary.
Oh, with drive-ins?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was like this variety thing with this huge driving setting and roller skate girls.
It's so funny.
My mom modeled for driving.
Oh, really? You can't see now. Yeah, it was full of beautiful women on roller skates. And,
so,
had its moments.
How long were you in London for?
I was in London for 11 years.
Wow. So during that time, you ate a lot of different kinds of food. And what place did Italian cuisine have in your life during that period? Was it something you occasionally had? Or
no, I was having it because it was the easiest sort of survival food to make still, you know.
So you would have, you
maybe
always had olive
pasta or.
So what did you always have in your kitchen? Was it always olive oil? There was always pasta.
Always olive oil. Always something that, like a piece of Parmigiano that I would bring from Italy. What else? Always basil. Some garlic, you know, the stuff, the pretty much the same stuff you have here.
So even though you were out there experimenting, eating a lot of different kinds of food, at the end of the day when you're at home, it was an Italian kitchen in a way.
Yeah, or maybe some hummus or things like that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in where I was living, especially in the early years, there was this, in North London, it's full of these Turkish shops where you can buy loads of fresh groceries. So it was easier also to cook in that way. And they had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of good peppers and garlic and stuff like that.
So then, moving back to Italy, What was that transition like in terms of food? Can you describe that at all?
It was actually starting to eat the real Roman food for the first time. Like really becoming, like I didn't really know what amatriciana or carbonara were like properly before. It was just a sort of vague. And all the awful stuff, like the oxtail, the tripe, the nervetti, the tongue, everything. You know, getting really into that, which is still amazing.
So why did you just discover that then? Were you going out to restaurants? Or was someone
making... Yeah, because in my family it was never that... It was more like a neutral type of cooking. It was never that... there was never, you know, no one would ever make like coda alla vaccinara or something like that, traditional Roman stuff.
Do you think that was true for the most part? Those kind of traditional, what you think was traditional cucina romana, you were really only seeing in restaurants and not in people's homes by then?
Yeah, I would never find it if I would go and have dinner at somebody's
right.
home. No one had, maybe some carbonara because it's easy. No one would ever make that sort of stuff.
Yes.
You can chat. So yeah, we didn't. I don't think we felt that Roman in that sense.
But we've talked to very few people who are making those typical Roman dishes at home.
Because
even
also
if
they take, you know, if you make oxtail, it takes like the whole day to cook in the
yeah.
in the pot with the sauce and all that stuff.
So as you transitioned into living here then, living here again, you were going out, were you also cooking?
Yeah.
More,
yeah. And also just really sort of appreciating the fact that you can get really fresh stuff here and it's cheap. Especially in this area, because I've been living here for a while, you know, you can shop and you can buy a 2 days worth of food at the vegetable shop, and they have everything, and it's all really good.
Mm. So, can you describe now-ish a typical day of eating from breakfast? Typical breakfast, typical lunch, typical dinner.
Breakfast is usually just coffee and some biscuits.
At home.
Yeah, and then.
Sometimes
at the bar, yeah.
Oh.
but I usually like to make breakfast here. And then lunch is usually it's something quite quick because I'm usually doing something else, or maybe I'm, you know, in the office and eating out, but maybe some eggs, like scrambled eggs, some omelette, some white rice, spaghetti with something simple like just cheese, cacio e pepe, or what else? Just a salad or something like that.
But you're typically cooking at home every day.
Yeah, I prefer to. If I can, I cook at home.
Why?
Just because I like cooking. Like, I prefer, you know, usually the stuff that I manage to put together is better than the stuff I can buy out. And I prefer it like that.
Mm. And then dinner?
And then dinner is, you know, it's the more sort of fun time where you can invest a little more time. So you make like, a nicer sort of a more elaborate pasta sauce with like some meat or... usually a lot of vegetables, like cooked, you know, maybe caponata or things like that. What else? It's hard to...
Yeah, I know. Well, if you have two really specific questions, where do you do your grocery shopping?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to go out to eat, where are the places you go?
Grocery shopping is all around here. So it's usually just the grocery stores. Which there's one just across the street, which is really amazing. It's these Romanian kids and they have everything. And it's
do you remember what it's called?
It's just Frutteria, but it's on the Ostiense, and it's kind of opposite Lorenzo's place.
Okay.
And they have stuff from Lazio, like north of Lazio, south of Lazio, and it's all amazing quality.
And that's where you get most of your groceries?
Yeah. Otherwise, Conad in the square over there, which is still very good. And then there's Alimentari just downstairs, which is also very good. But I usually just buy veg and fruit. Make like, you know, fennel, salads, cucumbers, avocados. Loads of avocados is something I forgot for lunch. Almost
which
every day.
Which isn't very common here, is it?
No.
No.
But
I mean, it's
very expensive.
And it's not always good when you open one. And
yeah. This place has good ones though. But yeah, something I really like that.
And do you have a special relationship with someone of people that sell you the food?
Well, you get to know people, yeah. I've been here for a while, so I kind of know most of the shops. We sort of say
like the guys in the store.
Yeah, the guys in the store. If you don't have maybe if you don't have all the money, you know, it's okay. They give you credit. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's very. But most of the shops here, because it's still very like a popular kind of area, it's very relaxed. Everyone's very nice and kind of hardworking, gentle.
So then when you do go out to eat, where are there particular places that you go to now that you like to go?
Yeah, there's a place called Da Bruno, which is across the bridge over there, which is
in Trastevere?
No, it's across the bridge here, so it's the Staccio near Porta Portese.
Oh, okay.
And it's small and it's very nice, and also we kind of, now we know the guys who run it, but it's very simple. Cucina Romana and Trattoria, and it's really good, well done. You know, nice ingredients and sort of friendly, and also they make really good desserts and roasts and whatever. Otherwise, I also like to go to sort of the comfort type restaurants. Like there's one called Da Settimio, which is near Campo dei Fiori, and it's very small and very very tidy, and you have to ring the bell to go in. And if they don't know you, it's a little, you know, they usually sort of, they're kind of slightly rude.
Why don't I go there?
It's amazing. They have. You should go there. You would love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, next time.
And they, you know,
that.
They make like pasta ceci, sort of meatballs on the grilled meatballs, and small plates. It's sort of very reasonable portions, all very good and light. It's the type of place where you're going to eat every night.
How
like
fascinating.
It.
So they obviously have very regular customers who go there, and they probably avoid the tourists.
Yes, and also if
you're
a
tourist.
Like
they would probably, but they're characters, you know, the people who've been running the place, and their father, the guy's father was running the place before him, who was actually Settimio. This guy's name is Mario, and he also always wears a silk scarf, and he can be really nice and he can be an asshole, like, depending on how he likes you.
Sounds
or not.
Great.
But usually he's quite, after the second time you go there, he gets quite friendly, and you know, you get to just bring your own plates in the kitchen because it's tiny.
It's so cool.
And you make your own coffee because they have a little coffee machine
it's
there.
So, cool.
So yeah. Some people I know, they've grown up there.
Is it expensive or...?
It's not cheap, but it's not expensive. It's probably a 30 € meal if you have a couple of courses and wine.
So,
but it's more about going somewhere where, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, I know it can be a, it's kind of a fake thing, but it's going somewhere where you can talk to the owner and sort of feel relaxed, and you know that there's not going to be any noisy people, and the service is always going to be the same. You know, there's sort of comfort areas.
It doesn't sound fake though. It sounds pretty.
Oh no, I like it a lot. Even though I know that if I go at Bruno's, I can eat more for the same money, and also they're really nice and stuff. But this place is really quiet. You know, it's a little bigger than this room, and it's. And then they have, like, they know that I'm an artist as well, so they joke about that, and they're like, oh, when are you going to bring us a drawing? And then they also tell you, if you go to the butcher in Campo dei Fiori, tell them I sent you, so they give you the nice cuts.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool. I love that. So I don't know, that makes me think of the impact of the tourists here in the city. Like, impact does that have, do you think, on the food?
Talking about, yeah, I think of Rome as a place where you not necessarily eat out very well. Like, I think it's overpriced, and most of the places are substandard for what they serve and what you pay. and it's close to the coast, but like most of the fish you get in a, in sort of, if you just walk into a random restaurant, it's not going to be good.
Mm.
The produce, because they know that, you know, people that don't know the place and maybe they're not familiar with the food, they might not have the same palate, so they will settle for something that's,
yeah,
that's less good. But a lot of people that are from Rome, they, you know, if, especially in the center of Rome, it's very hard to eat. Even the places that maybe were good in the beginning, restaurants, they were sort of quite understated, and they had good food. Now they've been all done up and they cost more, and the food is worse. So,
do you remember when the first McDonald's opened?
Yeah.
When was that? Do you remember?
80s. I think it was about probably 86, maybe 87.
And did you go?
No, I didn't go for a while. It was in Piazza di Spagna. I used to go to the independent sort of mom and pop fast food, just because they were near. But it was a very trendy thing to do. Like all the rich kids would go there. And, you know, it was very cool to go to McDonald's and eat burgers. And
wow.
They were probably slightly better as well in the 80s, maybe.
How do you think food culture in Rome has changed since then? Has there among,
I think there's
young people even.
I think there's sort of two opposing, as with most things, there's two opposing sort of currents. There's a lot of young people that I've met that don't really know how to eat properly, so they will eat only frankfurters with ketchup and like sort of really basic stuff that's not done well at all. And then there's another current, which is the whole sort of sustainable, organic, you know, do it yourself, traditional slash novel sort of type stuff, which is good, but sometimes it's a little too finalized to itself, you know what I mean? Like, it's just for the sake of it, and it for me should be the norm to have the good ingredients as it was before, because we're lucky to have all these resources. I mean, you can still go to Eur and you can pick cicoria from the, you know, the sort of the traffic islands, or Ughetta, or you have figs growing in the middle of the streets and traffic, and capers,
yeah,
all this stuff. So even if you were homeless, you'd probably whip up something really nice.
Is there a foraging culture here at all? Is there a culture of young people interested in foraging?
Not that I know of, but you know, it's you have to be into that sort of thing, and then you're part of that group that is into food, so you go to all the new food places and the places that are into that. It's kind of like a, you know, it's a group, it's a tribal kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not recognized, because people here also tend to be suspicious with the whole organic thing, because you know, it's like there's not much difference. Maybe in lately, yes, but there never has been much difference between the sort of normal stuff and the organic stuff, because people here still grow things in a sort of normal way. So it always seemed like, you know, I don't know, it's been always regarded suspiciously, like just a way to, you put some dirt on some carrots and you can sell them for more, you know, that kind of thing.
And so what, in, from your point of view, what is Cucina Romana? Like, what does it represent, or what is your...
I think it's, for me, like, the most charming thing about cooking is the ability to make something really good out of very little. So the more I have that, the more I can make that, or I can have that, the more I love doing that. Like, I don't usually like... I mean, I like to eat anything. I will eat anything. But when it's something that it's sort of, you know, made in economy, and it's using maybe leftovers or things like that, then I really love it, because I love the way it's done, because it's sort of, you're making something that's, you know, it's something that can sustain your body, but it's also pleasurable, and you're still making it out of need. So I think that's really beautiful.
So how do you in that you think relates directly to the roots of what is Cucina Romana?
Yes, because Rome was traditionally a fairly sort of, I mean, there's always been a degree of aristocracy and wealth, but also the poor were always pretty poor. So the whole offal thing, you know, the using all these thrown away part of the animal here was a big thing. And it's but even maybe fishing, you know, fish out of the river, like things like that, like being able to use whatever you got around and make something really nice, and not really have to go that far or have somebody travel and bring you something.
Yeah, so it seems like you travel a lot, and you've been to a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're away from Rome, specifically Rome, maybe not even Italy, but Rome for a long time, and then you come back, what are you most excited to eat? Or what do you represent, like, the taste of the city?
I'm quite excited, usually, just to have some pizza bianca, just like, you know.
Keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I can't get enough of that stuff. Maybe you open it up and fill it with other things.
Mortadella,
pomodori, and then,
so sorry, where do you go for that?
It depends. There's a place here that's called Doppio Zero, which is kind of a trendy bar, but they have a bakery section which is really good, and all the old people from the neighborhood go there, so it's a good sign. But it's quite cheap as well, and it's quite strange because the rest of the place is quite expensive, but this bakery is great. Otherwise I go to Campo dei Fiori in the Forno, Roscioli.
Mm.
There's a place called Panificio Passi here in Testaccio, wherever really. But that's something I look forward to when I come back here. And also, you know, going to Trattoria and having maybe some trippa or paiata, which is also something that I find amazing. Can be seen as something cruel, but it's also incredible and very local. Like, I was in California for a while, and I didn't miss anything, but when I came back, I was really happy because I would have these things.
Hmm. And if you had one dish, like one last dish, let's say, like one thing that, more than anything, you love to have right now?
Like a death row meal?
Yeah.
It can be five courses.
I'm not very good with that kind of stuff, because I have these sort of periods where I eat different things, but I think definitely the pizza bianca would be somewhere in there. I would probably have that, then I would probably have maybe some cacio e pepe pasta. Some kind of fish, like maybe fried calamari or alici fritte, something like that. Some peaches, some wine, and a buffalo mozzarella.
Well, this actually makes me think, I didn't really come up, but how much does the way you eat change with the seasons, when you're here and when you're not here?
I try to follow the seasons. If I'm here, I try to, because I actually like this, you know, it makes sense to eat something seasonally, and it makes sense with the weather. But the seasons aren't that, as you can see, they're not exactly how you expect them. And sometimes you just kind of slip, but I usually try and do that a lot. Just as a, it just seems sort of kind of philosophically right.
Also here, if you're eating from the markets, it's kind of inevitable anyway, it just happens.
Yeah, yes, and it's the best. Is the most luxurious thing you could have anyways.
Yeah.
Especially when you go to a market like the Testaccio and you see, you know, that somebody's brought in like broad beans just for April.
Yeah.
And they're all there and they're amazing. You just,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
You're not gonna buy a papaya, you're just gonna get those.
Yeah. That's great. That's all the questions I have. Yes, Laurent.
You told me that there is a sort of relationship between your work and food. Could you explain?
I think. Yeah,
yeah, because I'm surprised that when you describe the most important aspect of Roman's cook, is that you are able to produce something very delicious with poor stuff. And maybe this is the reason why you...
I think in the same way, like, I like to work with things that I find, you know, I like to work with ruined objects or things that have a history or something that bears a kind of the sign of some kind of impact and things like that. So, you know, when I'm working, I won't necessarily go out and buy loads of new materials. I probably work with what I've got. I find a lot of stuff, even, you know, big objects, things like that. So I think that's definitely a connection with the way I like to eat my food and the way it's put together is kind of similar, I think.
Like ribollita, things that use old bread.
Yes.
And
old bread, yes. I keep old bread, and you know, whenever I fancy it, I just soak it. Or, but even if I have something which just doesn't make my girlfriend happy, I've got something left over from the day before, even like a little bit that is still good of something, I'll probably put it in what I'm making next, because...
So where do you think that came from? Did that come from your grandmother? Did that come from... It doesn't sound like it came from your mother.
I think... No. Not even... I don't know. Maybe a little from my grandmother, because she was quite... She definitely taught me how to make these sort of leftover food rehabilitations, but I think it's even more just me being kind of willing to take that kind of risk and being adventurous. Like, I'll probably put ketchup in something that I've done just to, for the sake of it.
Right.
Things like that. So I think I don't really think it comes from anywhere. It comes from me having seen other things and having...
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting now. This is my last interview I'll have here, at least unless I come, we do one if I come back in 2 weeks or something. But it's been interesting to see what comes up over and over again, and this, there's so many things that you've said that have amplified other things we've heard from other people. It's been really fascinating. Specifically, one thing that comes to mind for me is that in the United States, very rarely would you follow the old people.
Mm-hmm.
And see what they're lined up for. Never, practically. I mean, very rarely. Maybe in very, like, particular immigrant communities, but...
Maybe
of course, here it's something everyone does. If where the old people are lined up for bread.
Yeah.
That's, like, the place where the bread's still being made the way they were when they were younger, maybe, or something.
And it means it's kind of correct as well, because, I mean, in this area, it's a lot of old people, and they mostly are not that wealthy, so...
Yeah.
If they think it's convenient to buy there, it's, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a shame also, because a lot of old people they keep a lot of really good information, you know, and they're the middle bit between the young and the old people is not really. I don't think they're that. That resourceful, so...
Like your parents' generation?
Yeah, my parents, you know, they're great people, but they never were... Obviously, maybe they were into other things and they wanted to, again, sort of...
Do you think it was the,
also,
the home generation? Like it,
yeah,
like
it was definitely a 60s thing of going against your parents, too.
But I think also what we've seen in the interviews is this tendency, maybe, I don't even know if it breaks down along age, but... Even really talented, interested cooks in their 60s and 50s, even, let's say. I think we've seen they tend to be a little bit more traditional, especially if they haven't traveled. There are certain recipes you do, and if you deviate from very particular norms from how you prepare it in Italy, you don't do it. Whereas for you, it's been really interesting, and other younger people we've talked to that have traveled a lot, there's much more willingness to experiment and not be so... tied to these particular, like really enjoying the traditions that exist, but also feeling free to change them radically if it suits you.
Yeah, totally. You can definitely, I mean, I think as long as the combination is right, some things you have to follow because they're, you know, they're sort of, they're kind of
sacred,
embedded with what you're making. So if you don't do that, then it's probably not going to come out right
like
either way.
Like what are the sacred things that you would never do? Like someone,
think of anything, but
someone was telling us she makes a pasta Dina with avocado.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I've done that, but it for me doesn't taste very good, but that's just
who was sitting there? Their whole face
pasta
just
with
avocado.
Dina.
Yeah, but some Italian was sitting there and it was
her roommate, her flatmate. Yeah.
So are there any things that you, as experimental as you are, you would never do? Or what for you represents, like, what are your rules, like, what are the parameters?
I think it's mostly like not, you know, if something is acidic, then you don't put something that's more acidic next to it. Like, you don't put lemon on tomatoes because they're already usually pretty sour. You know, things like that, like, if you have maybe fish with meat, you know, if you make like a pork chop with clams or something like that, that's amazing. I actually like fish with meat a lot.
I think it also gets at, like, what is the essence of
exactly
the culinary tradition? Like, what does it really come down to that's unshakable and that's there? Like, where is it headed? What is it going to evolve into? And what is at its basic core that can't change?
I think it's a matter of, as long as it's following a need, like which can be a seasonal need or an availability need, so maybe, you know, basil becomes extinct, God forbid, but then what do you do? Like, for example, this fish with meat in Toscana near Carrara, they make this dish which is mussels filled with ground beef, which is amazing. But it's totally, like, not typical
It's very local.
It's very local, yeah. Which is the beauty of this country. Mm. But, you know, it's not like Jamie Oliver putting something on a perfectly good dish just because he is doing it and is changing it because that's his signature and it doesn't need to be changed, you know what I mean? And kind of adapting it to
change out of necessity.
Yeah, or to whatever you have.
But you said local is the beauty. Being local is the beauty of Italy, but can you expand on that?
Well, just the degree of variety you can get within a certain area. You know, like if you're in this region, then okay, you're here, you'll eat. The city is always the worst because you get kind of the worst of everything. But then you go by Lago di Bracciano or Trevignano, you're gonna have eel alla cacciatora, which is like with vinegar, and, you know, and I've only had it over there, or a certain type of fish fried in a certain way. Then you go to I don't know, Viterbo, and you can have, or Castelli Romani, you have the porchetta, which you won't probably have. It won't be a typical lake dish. And then you go by the sea, and you have something else, and that's applicable to most of Italy. So, you know, if you go to Alba, you're going to have truffles and some kind of pasta that you won't find in another place. And you still find, like, things that are really just particular to the city or the region. Like, in Bari, you have street food, which is polenta deep-fried, like, slices of polenta deep-fried that are like tortilla chips. And you only have that in Bari.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. And that's, to me, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Biodiversity.
It's what I'm most attracted to about the country, but it's nice to hear someone say it, because I think there's a lot of things that are understood
mm-hmm.
about this that aren't really said because people just assume them, but that is an essential fact, like most important fact of the country, I think, that is...
Yeah, and I am really curious about going somewhere and trying something that is typical of that area. Like, say, if you go to... again, Carrara, then you go to Colonnata, and they will have the lard, which is only coming from that town because of the marble and, you know, the whole way of, like, things that come up because of the conditions that are allowing them to.
How do you do that and still avoid, like, kind of bad tourist restaurants that are just making local food? Like, there's the local food, and then... there's the local food that's prepared almost like as an amusement park or like just tourism. And you get a sense all over Italy, because tourism is such a big part of Italy.
Yeah.
There's restaurants that are just there saying, we have local food. And you know it's probably awful and it's just a tourist kind of place. Like, how do you distinguish between?
Usually, you get. I mean, if you're a little used to it, then you kind of get a hint from maybe the fact that they display a lot. Like, if a place is good, they usually don't display anything because they don't have to, because they make good food,
right.
So they don't have a huge capital letters menu or pictures or. I mean, here, pictures are like. Usually a sign of something that's awful. Maybe if you go to London and have a good kebab shop or a good Chinese restaurant,
right.
They're going to have nice pictures and it's
right.
Still going to be good, but it's a different type of culture.
Yeah.
Like over here, it's something that's so taken for granted that people don't have to advertise it. That's why most of the good, like if you go to like a trattoria, the good ones are going to be the really understated ones where probably there's three tables and the owner is kind of rude, but at the same time,
right.
He makes good food and, you know, it's very spare cutlery and stuff like that. So generally, I think it's the decor that gives you a feeling of the place.
Oh, so we did almost an hour. And actually, I have to go because
okay.
I have to run back to
the
academy.
Okay,
but if you want to...
Last
question,
you are one of the most expert of food person that I know. And you are like obsessed about food, and
yeah.
So what do you? Why? What are you look for in the food? Is a sort of visual satisfaction or a different needs? I don't know. It's because you love heat. So
I don't know. I think it's definitely usually. It's very rare that something that tastes good doesn't look good in a way or another. Like, it's very rare. Even if when you eat, like, pig's ears or, you know. So that's definitely, the way it vibrates visually, it's always something that I'm very enthusiastic about because it means that it's going to taste good. And... I don't know, usually it's just like sort of one taste being balanced by something else that's cutting it through the middle, like a contrast. Or just an idea, you know, maybe it's the idea of keeping the sardine under salt for a year that makes it really nice. That's something so primitive and basic and still and really smelly, but still amazing. So,
actually, that reminds me of another question, which is being an artist, in being someone really obsessed with food, where do you place food culturally as a cultural factor in a society in relationship to fine art?
I don't know, because it's usually associated with something quote-unquote creative that, you know, that when it's put next to art, so usually you have... when you go to art dinners, that there's always something that's a little quirky or off, which doesn't necessarily mean that the food is good. But I think I would still definitely consider like a sort of learning to be a chef something that's exactly like being an artist, being that kind of, you know, sort of coming up with things and solutions and. It's exactly the same thing to me.
But what about the daily, daily
exactly,
traditions of eating?
It's exactly the same. Like it's, and most artists that I know, they usually like the same types of food. Like they usually like the same types of simple, you know, whether it's offal or whether it's fish or whatever. It's very unusual that an artist will be only into like something super fancy. They will either be completely functional about it, so just not care and eat whatever just to stay alive,
mm-hmm.
Or they would just enjoy sort of the fairly simple stuff and fairly ancient stuff, I think.
Yeah.
But which is also very difficult to realize. Like the day-to-day stuff, you have to do that well, and it's as difficult as doing, I don't know, something that's like a foie gras with...
Can I ask one?
The thing is, I really have to run though. So maybe you guys can stay and like keep recording, and I'll just run. Sorry, I just have to back.
No, 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 no.
But so you're gonna come by today? To
yeah.
Stuff?
Yeah, I promised Gilda to go to the cinema this night, so maybe I stay for.
Okay. Noi finiamo cena verso le 10, allora 9 e mezza se vuoi venire. C'è qualsiasi.
Ti chiamo? Ah no, a studio, non ti trovo?
Forse no.
A che ora è la cena?
Noi finiamo, cioè alle 9 e mezza di solito.
Ok. E prima a che ora inizia?
L'8. Comunque, ecco, io ci sono lì tutta sera.
Vabbè.
C'è un sacco di roba di cose che.
Dai, lì, non ho trovato la bici.